hear the voice of God from Proverbs 8. It says, does not wisdom cry out and understanding lift up her voice? She takes her stand on the top of the hill beside the way where the paths meet. She cries out by the gates at the entry of the city, at the entrance of the doors. To you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. O you simple ones, understand prudence, and you fools, be of an understanding heart. Listen, for I will speak of excellent things, and from the opening of my lips will come right things. For my mouth will speak truth. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are with righteousness. Nothing crooked or perverse is in them. They are all plain to him who understands, and right to those who find knowledge. Receive my instruction and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that one may desire cannot be compared with her. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and find out knowledge and discretion. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogance and the evil way and the perverse mouth I hate. Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. By me, kings reign and rulers decree justice. By me, princes rule and nobles, all the judges of the earth. I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently will find me. Riches and honor are with me, enduring riches and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, yes, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. I traverse the way of righteousness in the midst of the paths of justice, that I may cause those who love me to inherit wealth, that I may fill their treasuries. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of his way, before his works of old. I have been established from everlasting, from the beginning, before there was ever an earth, when there were no depths I was brought forth, when there were no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills I was brought forth, while as yet he had not made the earth or the fields or the primal dust of the world. When he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, when he assigned to the sea its limit so that the waters could not or would not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him as a master craftsman, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing in his inhabited world, and my delight was with the sons of men. Now, therefore, listen to me, my children. For blessed are those who keep my ways. Hear instruction and be wise, and do not disdain it. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors. For whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who sins against me wrongs his own soul. All those who hate me love death. This is the inspired and inerrant word of the living God. May he bless its eternal truths to our souls. You may be seated. Children up through third grade are dismissed to their classes as well. Almost everywhere that we go in this life, any direction that we turn, we're bombarded by voices. Good voices, bad voices, ugly voices, political voices, familial voices, religious voices, friendly ones, angry ones, persuasive ones, some soft and sweet, others loud and forceful, some inspiring, others depressing. Some voices weighty, others insignificant. Some intriguing, others obnoxious. Urgent voices. that call you to seriously consider important matters. Comedic voices that provoke you to laugh at the absurdity of it all. We hear them at work. We hear them at home. We hear them in the car. We hear them when they knock at the front door. We hear them through our phones. We hear them through our iPads. We hear them through our computers and televisions. We hear them when we listen to music. We hear them when we read books. Some voices are dear ones, others are strangers, some are teachers, others employers, leaders and followers, young and aged, speaking endlessly about how we should think, how we should eat, how we should move, how we should follow, how we should medicate, how we should reason, how we should act, how we should read and respond and watch and work out and parent and dress and buy and vote, etc. Voices everywhere. Some of them articulate newer theories. Others teach ideas as ancient as life itself. This is significant because every one of those voices is sourced in belief. And every one of those voices carries with it an intended emotional and volitional response. These voices move to change you. They move to affect you, to capture your allegiance. We know that there are voices within the kingdom of righteousness and voices within the kingdom of unrighteousness. C.S. Lewis said it this way in Screwtape Letters. From the perspective, the fictional perspective of the demonic host, it says, "All has been occupied by noise. We will make the whole universe a noise in the end. We have already made great strides in this direction as regards the earth. The melodies and silences of heaven will be shouted down in the end." And this minefield of voices everywhere feels often impossible to navigate. You can't ever quite do it right. You know, you listen to too many of them, or you don't listen to the right ones. You're captivated by all the news, or you don't know about anything that's going on. You turn it on and you turn it up, or you turn it down, or you turn it off. Feels like you can never quite do the right thing. Even when you get alone and away from the voices, in solitude, there's still the echo of all the voices you've heard and the consideration of the things you've heard. And even if you could get past that, then you have the voice in your own head that reasons and thinks when all others go silent. So what, my beloved brothers and sisters, are we to do? Who are we to listen to? And how are we to discern good voices in the great and noisy morass? I would encourage you that if, as I wrote that, you feel like a little anxious now because of all of the voices, that the voice of God is filled with encouragement and direction in this regard. We're not left sort of listless and wandering. In Proverbs, we have seen, have we not, examples of wise and unwise voices. The father has spoken wisely to his son, and he has shown him the beautiful law and the ways of God. And we have this leader of sinners who has allured the son with ill-gotten gain and the promise of ease. And those are put forward for us to discern and to see and to hear or not hear, to embrace or to reject. And then there's been this female figure, Lady Wisdom, who cries for allegiance on the path of righteousness and life. And a second woman, Lady Folly, who's sort of whispered sweet seductions to allure people into her deathly trap. So we have seen examples of good and bad voices throughout, male and female, the father, the leader of sinners, Lady Wisdom, and Lady Folly. In Proverbs 8, what we have before us today is that Lady Wisdom raises her voice above the din, and she calls for our attention, and she exhorts us to listen. In some regards, it's very simple. That's the whole thing, is that she's just crying out and asking people to listen. So really the questions before us are, who is she, which will be review, and then why should we listen to her, which is what she develops in chapter 8. So, by way of review, Lady Wisdom is a literary character that's been employed by Solomon. And he's employed her to personify wisdom itself. So, in Proverbs, it is by her that he demonstrates to the son the urgency and the value and the appeal to walking this path of wisdom by this personification. It is fitting this morning then for us to be stirred up by remembering what wisdom is. Because wisdom is not, though we speak of her in proverbial, because of what's in front of us, and poetic ways as a woman. Wisdom is an immaterial trait. It's even described as a commodity. It's something that is possessed by and dispensed by God. It is this. It is skill in the righteous words and ways of Yahweh that is possessed and dispensed by Yahweh himself. Wisdom is meant, as we've seen through this journey, wisdom is meant to be habitually embraced, something that's intended to be trained in and clung to, no matter the apparent cost. And so we have her voice again. Proverbs 8 is the second time that Lady Wisdom has spoken, though, I mean, already you know it's God speaking through Solomon, who's writing this poem about a woman saying these things, right? But it's the second speech from Lady Wisdom. The first one was in chapter 1, and in that first speech, she had warned the simple, who are the uncommitted ones, the ones who are still sort of keeping their options open as it regards to life and righteousness. She encouraged them to listen before calamity strikes, right? Before it was too late. And if calamity struck and they had rejected and rejected and rejected her, then when this difficulty and this judgment came, then it would be too late. And the foundation of folly would betray the one who was standing upon it. Wisdom would be nowhere to be found. In this chapter, Wisdom's voice is self-promoting. She describes why we should listen to her. And she cries out in the open square. She exhorts everyone to hear her. She acts almost as a recruiter, reasoning with the passersby to pause and to hear her voice before walking through life. This is maybe something that, for those of you who have been in the faith for a long time, that you have spent much time with her. So in that regard, it's almost like the gospel call. It's a call to refreshment. It's a call to remembering. It's a call to continuing. Perhaps it may be as the story is laid out here that you may be a simple one. Maybe you are keeping your options open. You're younger, and you're not sure which way to go in life. You're not sure what is true. And this is certainly a call for you. So Lady Wisdom offers, in chapter 8, three persuasive reasons to listen to her. The text is divided up really into three main sections. They're about 10 verses each, so it's 1 through 11, 12 through 21, and then 22 through 31. So we'll take these one piece at a time. The first reason that Lady Wisdom gives we should listen to her is because she speaks truth. That's why we should listen. Notice a few things before we dive into the details of that, which you'll see in verses 6 through 8 primarily. She speaks truth in 6 through 8. A couple observations. One, wisdom is public and free. Right? Notice the setting that's here in verses 2 and 3. She's on a high place. She's at the crossroads, this place where the paths meet. She stands visibly and speaks audibly in these high traffic areas on purpose. She's not keeping a secret. She's not forming an underground society. She is in the public square. Her ways are clear. Her ways are accessible. And anyone with an ear to hear will hear her plainly. We'll see that take place in verse 9. They are all plain to him who understands and right to those who find knowledge. Notice secondly in verse 3 that wisdom is best heard at dawn. What do we mean by that? Wisdom is best heard in the dawn of life, that is youth, and wisdom is best heard in the dawn of the day, that is morning. This gives wisdom time. This idea is present at the gates, right? This is the entryway of the city. It's the very beginning of one's life of commerce. It's one's the very beginning of the day where you're going out to do business. And she says, before you do any of that, hear me. Why is that order, that time important? Because this gives wisdom time to work out her establishment in the heart of the hearer in the span of a life and in the span of a day. What that does is it functions to give the hearer wisdom before or as they go about their day and their lives. Better to have wisdom early and often so that your life is full of it than to get to the end of your life and to become a wise person and say, I wish I had lived in light of wisdom this whole time. Notice in verse 4 that wisdom is indiscriminately for everyone. So she says, to you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. This is part of the inclusio. That is the beginning and end, almost a bookend to the text. Pardon me as I flip quickly here. You'll see at the end of the third section that her delight is in the sons of men. And then in the conclusion, listen to me, my children, those who keep my ways. So she sort of narrows at the end from all those who might listen to the ones who have listened. But wisdom is for anyone who will what? Who will hear. In verse 5, we see that wisdom is unafraid of opposition. She's addressing not only everyone, but particularly those who may be bent against her, who might not listen, the simple ones and the fools. Again, simple being uncommitted, fools being committed against. She's calling to them. And what is she calling for? She's calling for change, for the simple ones to understand and for the fools to understand. That's different than their present practice in life. So she's not afraid to speak to those who might war against her. She has sort of a calm and a confidence even in the middle of the public square. But you do see in 5 that embracing wisdom would require humility and willingness to be changed. So with those things in mind, with the setting sort of laid out before us, what is she really after in this first portion of her speech? She's seeking to demonstrate that everything that ever comes out of Lady Wisdom's mouth is absolutely reliable. That's why we should listen. So that's the second piece of the inclusio here. Is this word shema, listen. It's the primary command in this text. So we'll flip to the end once again to show it to you. Hear, now therefore listen, same word. Hear, same word. Blessed is the man who listens, same root. Those are all shema. So it's for everyone to hear, to dedicate their ears and their hearts to this reality, to these words. Again, why would we do that? Reason number one, because her words are true. Notice how this sort of takes place in these three verses. Is that every one of these verses is a pair? So there are 6 things in these 3 verses that she sort of commends herself with. These are things that are true. Her words are excellent. Her words are, out of the opening of her lips come right things. For my mouth will speak truth. Wickedness is an abomination, so no wickedness. All the words of my mouth are with righteousness. Nothing crooked or perverse is in them. You see that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Just all of these pairs sitting together. And what is she intending to communicate by this? Well, there's a variety of word pictures here, but the primary one is the idea of straightness, of trueness, trustworthiness, faithfulness, that you could bet your life upon it and it will not betray you. Her words will not betray you. As we consider all of these voices in the world, if you had an assurance that that voice was sourced in absolute truth, wouldn't that give you a significant degree of confidence to lend your ear and your life to that voice? That's part of the issue, is trusting the voice, isn't it? It's like, I don't know where you're coming from. I don't know what your agenda is. I don't know what the next thing out of your mouth is going to be. But if you knew that from that moment unto eternity, everything out of this mouth would be trustworthy, strong, and true, that there would be no error in it, that it was absolutely free from wickedness, that it actually hated wickedness. And that's a foreshadowing to the middle portion, wickedness and abomination to my lips. But nothing crooked, so there's the alternate to the straight path. Ecclesiastes laments the very reality of life, that the reality of our existence under the sun is bent. It is crooked. It has been broken. And so anything that we could take a hold of in this life that we know is not bent, is not broken, that would be a tremendous reassuring reality for us in a very crooked and twisted world. So this is her primary, her first reason that we should listen. Words are straight and true, without deviation, without crookedness, no fracture, no weakness, no underhanded motive, no incoming gotcha moment. A strong and pure message will always come from the lips of Lady Wisdom. And this is fascinating, isn't it? That those things become plain to the one who understands. They are right, so the words are right. Here's the same word. From our perspective, those who discover her. Now, where is she? Where is she to be found? Here, in verses 10 and 11, she's found... she's found on the paths of righteousness. This is where she is, right? In the midst of the paths of justice. So for these people who are seeking her and searching out wisdom, and they're on the paths of righteousness, and on this path of righteousness, they hear words of truth and words of joy and words of clarity, and they say, this all makes sense. It all fits together. They have been given ears to hear, and so they hear. They have been given eyes to see, and so they see. There's this discovery that takes place along this path. And so, having conceived the reality of her priceless words, let us, in verse 10, put aside worldly pursuits in exchange for wisdom from above. She is more valuable than material gain. She is more valuable than silver. She is more valuable than choice gold. Even if everything that you could ever dream up were put on one side of the scale, and an ounce of wisdom is put on the other side of the scale, it inevitably and will always outweigh any material possessions. And so we would do well to make this holy exchange. And in doing so, we will progressively discover and grow in relationship with knowledge, with understanding, with wisdom, making it increasingly straightforward is the idea of plain. It is morally simple, right? Isn't that, if you never tell a lie, then you have a morally simple path before you. Might be difficult, but it's, you know what you need to do. And wisdom is the same. She always speaks truth. There's no deception, no duplicity. So she's morally simple. It makes sense. So that's the first reason, is that we should follow her, is that every word of hers will be true. The second reason is that she shares treasures. And I don't really know a better way to go about this than to just walk through this. This is like a shotgun effect here. There's all sorts of things in 12 through 21. It is jam-packed. She's telling you all of her virtues. She's giving her resume. She's showing, like, I have this, and I have this, and I can do that. And if you come into my house, you'll see these things. And if you go over here, then I'll bless you with that. She's just showing all of these incredible things that she has. She's giving her credentials. Her biography is very impressive. And the key concept that we need to understand here is that what she possesses, she bestows. What she has, when you find her, becomes yours. So if she's saying, I am all these things, when you find her, you are given and become all of these things. The credentials of wisdom are the promises of wisdom. So each line is a little bit different. That's why it's pretty packed. But in these first three lines, 12, 13, 14, notice that there's sets of four things. So I, namely wisdom, I live with prudence and find out knowledge and discretion. So you open the house of wisdom. And what do you see? You see all of these other tremendously virtuous women, you may say. Like, her house is full. Like, it's not just wisdom alone. Wisdom has wonderful companions of prudence and knowledge and discretion. He's almost using these synonymously, but to get at different aspects of this great skill that someone may possess as they walk in the ways of godliness. He says, you'll have discerning. You'll be able to see clearly what is right and what is wrong. You'll have the ability to respond to these situations in the world with righteous cunning. And it will all seem, like he said before, plain. So it's almost like if you form a great relationship with some powerful person, then they have connections with all of these other powerful people. That's kind of the image that's painted in verse 12. And then highly significantly is 13. This is the primary characteristic of wisdom. We've seen it in chapter 1. We'll see it again in several weeks in chapter 9. But the fear of the Lord, she just describes it first. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Okay, this is something that's consistent in Scripture. These two are often paired together, that obedience in the fear of the Lord or hatred of what is wrong in the fear of the Lord are put together, and it teaches us that understanding God and understanding virtues are very closely connected, that you cannot say, I love God and I love sin. These things are incompatible with each other. And to love the one or to fear the one is to hate the other one. And then he'll give the equal opposite at the end of the poem, that those who hate wisdom love death. So he says here, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. And then she demonstrates, and I do, I hate evil. Look at these four things that she hates: pride, arrogance, the evil way, and the perverse mouth I hate. So she just gives her, she's saying, look, I fear the Lord, is what she's saying, because she has this passionate hatred for all that opposes Yahweh. We'll get into this a little bit more at the end. And then you see four other things that she says she possesses. She has counsel, she has sound wisdom, she has understanding, she has strength. She's like, look at me. It's not that I just have these things as though I got an 100 on a test one time. I've always gotten 100 on every test. There's never been anything I haven't been able to navigate in righteousness. So if you need this, call on me, search me out, look for me, seek me, and you will find me, as we'll see in a moment. You just see this sort of fortress of counsel, not simply maybe one piece of paper that says, well, here's one good thing to think about. There's every good thing to think about here. And then she says a few things that's like, here's a couple, like, again, the resume idea, maybe. And with attendant promises. So there's two promises here. The first one in 15 and 16 is like power, and then he gets into riches. Maybe here in 17 we could add love. So power, love, riches, these are all things that would be yours as you hear, as you shema, Lady Wisdom. By me, she says in 14 and 15, kings reign and rulers decree justice. By me, princes rule, and nobles, all the judges of the earth. So it's just all of the synonyms for everyone that's ever been in control of anything, and they did well, and they were righteous, and it was just anything good proceeded out of their mouth. She says, that was because of me. I was behind them. I was with them. I was animating them. They saw something about the fear of the Lord, and they spoke in light of it. So any sort of reign that has been just, any sort of rule that has been righteous, she says, I did that. And remember, what she has, what she possesses, is something she bestows. So she will bestow ability to rule well. She will bestow ability to parent and to husband and to be a mother well, all of these things. To be an employer, to be an employee, she'll teach you in the way. And then 17, love. So it's reciprocal. She's reciprocal. She says, I love those who love me. All those who seek me diligently will find me. In light of some of the other maybe mysterious or enigmatic things that are portrayed about wisdom in the Scripture, this is very encouraging. That those who walk in the way of righteousness, Those who desire, who seek his face, will find him. Those who seek to know wisdom, to know the skill of living in God's way, will find it. She makes this promise. And it's related to this idea of love, this idea of relationship with her. This is something the dad, Solomon, has been seeking to present his son with, is this poetic marriage that's supposed to take place. Commit yourself to her, and she will not disappoint you. Then we have this discussion, really, of riches. And I think what I'd like to point out primarily is that riches and then some other sort of virtue are, it's a conversation of the two of them together. So riches, honor. Riches, righteousness. One sounds like money, one sounds like a spiritual reality. And then we have the opposite. Fruit is better than gold. Yes, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. So once again, you see like something she's giving sounds more spiritual and virtuous than it sounds a lot more monetary and material. And two more that sound virtuous. I traverse the way of righteousness in the midst of the paths of justice. And then you have that I may cause those who love me, here's the connection back to love, to inherit wealth. And then I may fill their treasuries. So you just kind of see that back and forth, and you're sort of left at the end of it like, wait, what is it? Do I get a load of cash now? Or is it just something sort of spiritual, material, or non-material? And the answer, we don't have time to go too, we'll speak carefully, but not too in-depth, is that the answer is yes in Proverbs, very clearly yes. There are other points that say very clearly that when you walk in the ways of the covenant, you receive the covenant blessing, and that is described in spiritual and material ways. And that's sort of what's happening here too. There are spiritual and material realities at play in the text here. This idea of riches and honor is something that honor is the word glory. There's this social weight. He's saying like you will have favor. And so I believe when we went through chapter 3, that would be a good point to go back to and look more carefully and more extensively, even perhaps listen to that sermon, chapter 3, 1 through 12. But we have this as we have the kingdom of God. We have this in reality and in spiritual truth. We are rich. We have everything. We have health. We have gold. We have all of it in Christ. It's a spiritual reality, and it will even come to pass in the kingdom physically. Recently in the book of Mark, I think we discovered another and true extension of this, even in the material world, that Jesus says that all who have left anything will inherit all things, even now 100-fold. And what he's pointing to is the reality of the family of faith. So we share all things in common. So in wisdom, in the community of wisdom, our coffers just got full. In the community of wisdom, we have an abundance. It's sort of this together idea. It's a rich family. So all of these things, again, you just see it's like one thing after another. But all of her virtues, her great mind, the fear of the Lord, ability to rule well and be discerning in leadership, love, reciprocal love, and riches. All of these things are present with wisdom. And so she says, come to me, hear me, and be blessed. Receive in abundance. This third piece, you wonder, how are we going to get through this? This piece we're primarily looking at for next week. We're going to save for next week. So we'll talk about how it works in chapter 8, but then it's historically and practically significant enough that we're going to spend an entire sermon here, 22 through 31. But the point of 22 through 31 is wisdom's presence in creation. And so her argument in chapter 8 is, so she speaks truth, she shares treasure, and here she sees totally. She's seen it all. She's been here since before the beginning of time, is the idea. So if you have somebody that says, hey, look, I'm walking around in the ways of righteousness. I'm a good guide for this life, and everything I say is true. One of the questions you might want to ask that voice is, how old are you? Or how long have you been around? you know, how long have you been saying these things? I want to see if it's sort of worked. And she says, I've been around since before anything. Like, I've been around. God brought me forth before he made anything. So she's very, very experienced, totally experienced. From everlasting, from the beginning, that's when she was brought forth. She's delighted in the world, in the created world, and in the ways of men since then. So what's the conclusion? The conclusion is that the blessed life and divine favor awaits those who will hear Lady Wisdom. She says, essentially, in conclusion, now therefore, repeating the singular or the primary command, listen to me, my children. I say again, hear me. A life of blessing awaits the one who does. Those who pursue wisdom down the path of righteousness will find her. And with understanding of righteousness comes life and divine favor. Those are present in 35. But ultimately, the one who doesn't, these are really interesting poetic phrases. The one who sins against me wrongs his own soul, and all those who hate me love death. Okay, so the one who sins against me is simply in the semantic range of the word, it's appropriate, and I think particularly appropriate here, to say the one who misses. It's not as though exactly that they took a shot, but more like they missed a train. Like they missed it. She was there, she was calling and calling and calling, and they never moved. They never responded. Instead, they chose simplicity. They chose folly. They chose even scorning. And so she says, that person, the one who has missed me to his own harm. It said the words are, the one who misses does violence to his life. It's very harmful. And we've seen that in Lady Folly and her house, right? What seems sweet initially ends in great bitterness. What seems like pleasurable is the slippery slope unto Sheol. It's unto the gates of hell. And so he says, if you miss, you will do violence against your own soul. And then once again, this idea of love and hatred paired or contrasted very strongly, that to miss wisdom, to miss the fear of the Lord, to not care what God has said, to not care how he intends for people to live, to not care about the ways of righteousness, that is the love of death. So our affections, the affections of humanity, are exposed by the way that they live. And one could deny it all that they want. They say, no, I don't hate like God, or I don't love death. But what the text is saying is that one does. It's displayed by your activity. Your affection is displayed by your activity. So in the poem, this is the key of what to do, how to listen. So if we're back to, okay, so I want to be this sort of individual. I want to respond. I want to hear. So he says, okay, good. Watch at my gates and wait at the posts of my doors. Class dismissed. He's like, watch at my gates and wait at the posts of my doors. So we have her household imagery here again. And she's saying like, be eager to come in and dine with me. Be eager for a relationship with me. And we should wonder how to apply that. We should sort of sit here and say, okay, well, now that we've quickly moved through the entirety of your speech, the answer for what I'm actually supposed to do is not immediately clear. You keep saying, listen to Lady Wisdom, listen to Lady Wisdom. Hey, hear me because I speak truth. Hey, hear me because I'll give you good things. Hey, hear me because I've been around for forever. But what do I actually do? Like, what do I do tomorrow? How do I listen to her? Because, for those of you maybe who are less desirous of the poetry, you're sort of sitting here like, okay, so she's not real. She's not a woman. You can't actually hear her. This isn't a solitary voice. This isn't a person you can find. And so sort of undress the poetry and what are you left with? I don't know. Hear what? Listen to what? Wisdom doesn't even have a voice. And yet we saw in verses 4 through 11, the importance of her words. So where do we get these words? How can it be that her words are so significant when they are apparently immaterial? So keep these things in mind just to properly understand the poetry and as we move to application. That wisdom is a unified voice, but not a solitary voice. So it sounds like a solitary voice when we read it in the poem, because she cries out. Wisdom's not only found one place. You could hear wisdom in 1,000 places. She exists in the hearts and on the tongues of all those who have pursued and lay hold of life and divine favor on the path of righteousness. She exists in the hearts and on the tongues of all those who have pursued and laid hold of life and divine favor on the path of righteousness. So she precedes historically and presently